So today I am joined by Chance Dillon. I scheduled this a little bit back, had to reschedule it once. I did this because as much as I love having author interviews, it's nice to have a booktuber on once in a while, because then I have no homework. I don't have to read a book. And then this bastard put a book out. So I've been reading a book. So it's been a little crazy. Chance, how are you doing today?
I'm doing swell. How about yourself?
Eh, not too bad. Not too bad. No complaints. I do ask something, and since this is now officially an author interview.
Yeah.
Hey, EJ's hanging out. How's it going, EJ?
How's it going on, EJ?
I always ask of every author, and you can do this either as a booktuber or as an author. What is your supervillain origin story? What prompted you to become this, to write this book?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a great question. Initially, it was Dungeons and Dragons. The way it's asked, I feel like I may have said this, but the way you put it makes it sound way worse in like a good way. It started with Dungeons and Dragons. It started with a backstory for, you know, a Batman-esque character, which, you know, in Dungeons and Dragons actually becomes a very not fun character to play. And one day after, you know, working through a campaign that I had built, through a world that I had built, I had had a hip surgery. My mom came to visit me in Lemoore, California. I was in the Navy at the time. My buddies were out on deployment. And I took the, you know, three paragraphs I wrote for this one character after, you know, just I my mom had left. I was sitting in a chair downstairs with my leg elevated, you know, after that torn hip labrum surgery. And I just had this moment of loneliness, that, you know, and I crutched upstairs, sat in the chair and started writing and didn't stop. Did it every day from that moment. It's because you framed it as a villain origin story. I'm like, yeah, I guess it kind of could be a villain origin story in a lot of ways, which is kind of funny.
I just think it's a fun way to say it.
It is.
So one, you're in good company. There's quite a few authors that started off with the D&D. I know Jen Lyons did. I believe it didn't Malazan start out as a D&D.
Yeah, it was a tabletop RPG variant. Yeah.
It's I can't imagine being laid up as a seaman there. You know, as an airman, that would just be a normal day, kicking back with our feet up. So
yeah. It's funny because I did work in aviation in the Navy. Which, you know, you do that sometimes. But yeah, I was kicking back for, I think I got 2 or 3 weeks off for that. I don't remember what it was, conditional leave or whatever. But yeah, I was fortunate that I had just watched Dune as well. Like the first Dune again, rewatched it with my mother when she was there. We had watched like Shadow and Bone or something on Netflix as well. She like loved that show. And then I don't know, I took that three paragraphs and just kind of went for it. And you know, started asking myself a lot of questions, and my favorite stories, you know, cinema wise was always Lord of the Rings. So, with that character, I started asking myself, what if Aragorn lost everything after the war for the One Ring? And what if Sam had to kill, Frodo, to save Middle Earth? And we're going to get that through the arcs of the series here, hopefully.
Spoiler alert.
There's a character named Sam and there's a character named Frodo. And it's just the same thing. Oh, nice. Yeah. D&D is not something I came to D&D so late. Because I discovered it in the Navy when I was in the Navy with friends who knew how to play, which I was curious about it at a young age, but I never, you know, we had a lot of video games growing up. So I played a lot of RuneScape. I played a lot of World of Warcraft and a lot of RuneScape, and then other video games, you know, like I was always in love with Gears of War and other first person shooters. And I got really competitive with those games just generally. Big video games, big into video games, never really did D&D, the tabletop thing, but I always wanted to. I was always so curious because I had no idea what it was. And I would hear people talking about it. I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. And then once I got into it in the Navy, it was like game over. I was like, this is awesome. This is like a free form storytelling medium that I've never experienced before. And it's just such a good time. How about your experience with D&D?
I came this close to playing D&D. Same thing, military. One of my friends, they put together a campaign, and I was out of town on vacation for the first weekend. And when I came back, they just never got back together. Nobody could ever get back together at the same time.
Yep, it's the hardest part.
That was the end of it. I almost put one together a couple of years ago with a couple of authors, and they all wanted to do it, but we could never all find the same time. So
yeah, well, we got to get you in our rotation. We have like a group that we're trying to start to slowly build, you know, like Jake, Thomas Howell, Zachary Shea, he was in it. So we're trying to get like, Andrew Wizardly Reads. Like we're trying to just get some people involved.
If Andrew's in it, I can't be in it.
Okay. Okay. Got it. I'm hoping he sees this.
Yeah. Maybe. But my biggest problem, you've probably seen my biggest problem right now is just having time in my schedule. It's crazy.
Your calendar is wild.
As you know, I mean, I already had to reschedule you once. So yeah, definitely making sure we had this today. It was actually kind of funny. Basically, I grabbed a couple of you guys and I had Josh. I can't think of his name.
Red Fury Books.
Not already overbooked.
Already overbooked. Josh. I mean, I'm thinking of two Joshes.
Yeah, there's too many Joshes. I can picture him. I had him on the channel. But anyhow, he's the one that always does the, inappropriate place for a book
review. Is it Reformed Reader?
My brain just, I could not think of Reformed Reader to save myself.
But
I was kind of actually just going through some of us who were always doing the let's face it, kind of stupid town square stuff.
Oh yeah,
it's like this would be a bunch of fun guys to have on. But yeah, so I'm glad to have you on. I gave you a little crap about the book. That was completely teasing. I am in the book. We are going to, if anybody's curious, we're not going to have any spoilers today because I have been kicking my butt. And according to Kindle, I'm 88% done.
Ooh.
I couldn't quite finish it this week. I've got two jobs and it's just been crazy.
No, I was not. I'm grateful you
but decided I am booked. I'm going to finish it.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're probably... I wonder where exactly 88% is. I'm trying to think in my head. I have no idea. You don't have to say.
Without giving anything away, it's the final, it feels like it's the final steps towards the top of the mountain.
Okay. So they're still outside.
Yeah. Stuff has happened.
Okay, stuff has happened.
They've gotten to the point where they have to leave the horse behind. That's
okay.
All I'm gonna say about
okay.
That.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. All right.
Somebody let Sam in. Mm-mm.
Greetings, gangsters. That's a new one. I like that. Yeah. Versus wasabi.
Next time he'll be back with that whole stay fresh cheese bags ones. But we'll,
there it goes. Yeah.
So I do have a question for you. This is your debut novel.
Yeah.
A lot of times I have authors on here and I always talk to them about, you know, what are the things that you learned or that you wished you'd learned sooner. But as somebody who is brand spanking new to having your book come out, what did you learn on this journey that you would like other people who are looking to write a book to know maybe?
Yeah, I think if people are just starting out, it's important to acknowledge that, you know, we all have to cut our teeth. I know we want to craft perfection, but it's just at a certain point you're going to hit, it's near impossible. So make the story about as perfect as it can for you. I think there's like a natural feel that you might have for the story you're trying to tell. You know, I think at least if you're telling the truth, authenticity is really important. I think if you're being authentic with your story and yourself and, you know, what's being put out there, then you can't go wrong. It's all part of the journey. Don't worry about criticism. Don't worry about, you know, being told no, just push through. I think everything that I did, because you have to take steps. You have to learn, you know, I had to learn how to write. I hadn't been a writer. I always considered myself a bit of a storyteller generally, but I'd never been a writer. I had such an appreciation for story and structure of story and plot and, you know, through the character's eyes, X, Y, and Z, but I was never a writer. So I had to be incredibly patient with myself, which was hard to do. But you got to sit down in the chair and you got to cut your teeth. And the same goes for every stage of the game. So, you know, I cut my teeth writing. I'm still cutting my teeth writing. And, you know, once I learned sort of like the aspects of the craft and started honing in on my voice, my narrative voice, get a professional, get a professional to help you sharpen those skills. Not that mine are perfect, but that's why I'm going to keep hiring a professional, to help me, hone my skills as I progress through my ability to write. I know that that's easier said than done. I'm fortunate to have spent time inside of a quote unquote trade in my life for roughly 10 years, that, you know, affords me the opportunity to afford such, services, especially because I'm doing it independently, but, it's worth saving. It's worth spending time to save for that. Think of it like a college course on, you know, if you hire a good editor, you're getting, you might be getting a master's level education from said person, which I was fortunate. I felt like, you know, in whatever page document I got going back and forth once or twice with my editor, Dave, I felt like I was getting that and I was afforded that. I think if Dave ends up coming in here, that'd be actually very funny if you saw that. But yeah, I'm intending, I've shot emails back and forth with him. I'm really excited for him to get booked too, and see what he has to say. But he's a very smart person. And there's tons of smart editors out there. You got to take advantage of the access that we have with the modern day and age of all the resources out there for sure.
Oh yeah. I think I've done almost 40 interviews at this point. I think the one thing that I can say almost everybody has in common is you can work on the perfect novel, or you can finish a novel. Yeah. If you're waiting for perfection, nobody ever writes the perfect novel.
Yeah.
Second thing, I like the fact that you pointed about the editor, because let's face it, you can double check yourself and do stuff, and you know, maybe you do know all the spelling errors and you know all the grammar rules and all that other stuff, but there's something about having somebody, because you know what you meant when you wrote something.
Yeah.
Having that other set of eyes look at it and go, okay, this is a properly constructed paragraph, but I don't know what you mean. I'm not pointing out anything in your book. I'm just saying, doing these well. There's a lot to have that second pair of eyes look at it and goes like, that's a beautiful quote. What the heck do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Where does it show on the page sometimes? It is interesting because you will hear, you know, you'll hear inverse opinions about aspects of what you work on. You know, like some people really like the emotions that come from the character. Some people feel like there's not enough. Some people feel like there's, I don't think I have an issue. I don't think people say that there's too little world building or phrases in my book, but that could be something that maybe there is for somebody out there, you know, who knows down the line. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to kind of put your heart out there and, you know, bleed a little bit and show it to the world. So, you know, there's a lot of vulnerability, I think, involved in that. So you just got to kind of dive head first, really, and just kind of get after it and get rid of that voice of resistance in your head. The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, I think, is one of the greater books I've read in terms of just overcoming that voice in your head when you're sitting in the chair and looking at a blank page. You just got to kind of jam your fingers down and, you know, vomit words and see what comes out, outlining or otherwise.
I didn't write it down because I only thought about this as I was talking here. I think it was Dolo, because I think I read it today. I think he had a line in there where he said something, and then he's like, where he kind of in his head is like, I don't even know what that means, but it sounded like, you know, the advice that I should give somebody or something like that.
Yeah,
he had a quote in about there that was I thought that was very funny.
Yeah, I know the line you're talking about. I figure there's a. I think also people in the military would appreciate that one or have any sort of been in the military.
I do a lot of things that still don't make any sense to me, but
hey. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Still not quite sure what the point of is being able to fold my t-shirt into 5-inch squares, but yeah. I can do it if I have to.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can anymore. Training.
Let's not do that.
Yeah.
I'll have the same haircut these days. So. you know, other question, and you've got the BookTube. You were a BookTuber before the book came out.
Yeah.
Which is, trust me, it's its own job in and of itself on top of whatever else you're doing. What does a day in the life of Chance Dillon look like?
During the week, I wake up around 6. I roll out of bed. I usually, you know, get ready for work. I get to work. I'm a personal trainer day to day. So I usually get there either between 7 or 7:30. Some day, you know, it varies. Some days I don't have people in the morning, so I get there at like 8:30. But yeah, Monday through Friday, usually it's by 7:30. And then I'm there until 2 or 3, depending on the day. I'll usually either throw a workout in the middle of that or at the tail end of it. So I'll either start working out at 2 or 3, or I'll, if I have time in the middle of the day, I'll do it then. I come home, I eat, I'm eating maybe a bar or a shake or something during the day while I'm at work. I know I'm getting into gross detail here. And yeah, and then I sit down after a shower and I hop in my quote unquote chair, which has been various places lately. A lot of times with revisions, I might go to a coffee shop near me, but I'll sit in a chair and just go for maybe an hour or two and just work on whatever manuscript I'm working on right now. I'm revising book 2. I'm on my second pass through it, and then it's going out to alpha readers in July. When it comes to drafting, I usually give myself, it has to be an hour that I'm in the chair at least, because it's so easy to just like, you know, beat yourself up sitting there. But I try to get 1,000 words a day when I'm drafting. And I think this time with book 3, I'm going to have to bump that up a little bit with, you know, going from the experience I had with books 1 and 2, I think I'm going to be able to push out a little bit more just in terms of, you know, learning as I go. Yeah. But that's it. And then, you know, hang out with the girlfriend at the end of the day, have dinner and go to bed around like 9:30, 10. Get some reading in there if I can.
Except for the working out and the writing, sounds kind of like my job. My wife's a nurse, so her alarm goes off at like 6 a.m. So I'm up then and now, even though I don't have to be up that early.
Yeah, yeah.
And she usually is in bed around 9 because, again, she has to be up at 6 a.m. So, hey, yep. I get that. What was it? A couple things about the book. We're going to avoid spoilers. The book's not out yet. Although sure. I do have to tease you. You say you're working on book 3. I can tell you for a fact, book 1, at one point, I got to a part that said book 3. So you've already written 3 books.
I guess you split
that up. Also, my goodness, look, anybody who wants to get this book, A, buy the book because we need to get Chance and Mike Stan.
I don't think that's happening anytime
soon. Get yourself the physical copy. You've got maps. You've got the glossary. You've got the list of people. And I think of those. Being able to flip back and forth to those while you're reading the book, especially because you kind of throw us in it at the prologue, and we're hit with a lot of new terms and new words and stuff real fast, and being able to flip back and forth. I've got the ebook, so that was just a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
By the time you get us into the first chapter, we've hit the ground running, which absolutely love that about that. But I am just telling people, get the physical book. Get the physical book. I do love the maps. I'm a sucker for a good map. What can I say?
Yeah. Jack Shepard crushed it.
You kind of already kind of hinted about what was the, or at least some of what started this. What was the germination? What? That's not the word I'm looking for, but you know what?
I mean, could work.
Yeah, kind of the inspiration for this this novel. Where did you go? Because the biggest thing I think you had that not everybody can pull off. You have a lot of different people's points of view. Mm-hmm. This is not a book focusing on one character. This is not even a book that's focusing on a group that is together, like a fellowship. You've got people here and you've got people there. How hard was it also to keep track of, okay, this person, what does the reader know at a specific point, and what does this character know at a specific point? Do you have like a big giant murder board behind you with a bunch of red strings going, who does what?
Oh, no. So this is kind of a bit of a curse because it lives in my brain. It's like the voice in my head. That said, a lot of the perspectives, there's usually a narrative through line. The world is like sort of an easy character for me to think of that, you know, how it looks to each person in terms of just keeping things consistent. I think, especially in book 1, I tried to limit it to three at least major scenes or points or perspectives that we're trying to get. And I know that there's more than 3 primary POVs. I just mean in terms of like the journey. Like there's 3 major journeys I think that we go on in the main book. You have one party going one place, You have another party you can allude to sort of heading in that same direction. And you have another party sort of separating from that. And then, of course, you have people around them and what that looks like. I think I've always looked at it from a cinematic standpoint, like how would each scene sort of fit into a movie or a film or a TV show or whatever. I like to think of it that way in my brain. So that way it's visual for me. And when that happens, it's easy for me to sort of keep everything together. And then at a certain point, you have to accept what is truth for each character. I had to accept what was truth for each character. And that looks different for obviously each character. But me just accepting, okay, this is this person's point of view. This is where this person comes from. Maybe sometimes even vaguely, especially with book one. As things got more refined, it made it a little bit easier because I wrote book two before book one was completely done through the editing process, which helped a lot. But it was just like sort of keeping the truth of what storied the characters to what where they got to in the back of my mind as I'm in that character's head and being in their voice. And when I'm in their voice, I know sort of what's going on around them. And I know some things that I have to allude to because sometimes it's kind of cheating using multiple POVs in a way, because I can allude to something in one person's POV that for them, it's sort of just like a passing piece of information. Whereas for another perspective, it's a major player in what they need to be doing or how active they are inside of that thing. And yeah, I think just like learning from the people that came before me and narratively, I think I did want to create sort of that foreign feeling when getting into the book. And that sort of comes from wanting to create that aspect of discovery and learning. And, you know, I don't want people to go back and on a second read and like I mean, it's so hard to recreate that feeling that we get when we first pick something up of wonderment. And I got that through Elden Ring when I played that as a video game. And then, yeah, I think keeping everything together, especially when doing that, was just sort of me accepting the truth of what was in the world and what was for the characters. That's the short answer.
All right. I do have to say, too, your world building on this one, I can't imagine the amount of notes you've got, everything from the, I got to remember to quit shaking this because it shakes my camera.
There you go.
Everything from you've got kind of a religion going on. You've got the forgotten gods and the new gods, but then you've also got the wills and all the different forms. Very, very almost kind of Sanderson-esque with some of the stuff and the amount of preparation I think you put into this, because to write this book, you've got to figure that all out ahead of time to just keep it straight. Mm-hmm. Also, another, I love the fact that you kind of have the religion in there, but it's not front and foremost is in your face.
Yeah.
I mean, they call them the old gods, but you're never sitting around really following a priest. There's a few people on the streets, don't get me wrong, talking about this and that.
Yeah.
But we're never inside a church. You've got the ordained, you've got some of that other stuff, but we never really have that necessarily religious figure to follow. And obviously, again, remember, I'm pulling in the drive here, so I'm not quite finished with it. And you've got book two and you've got book three. Maybe those are going to become bigger. I don't know.
Yeah.
But where did you want to draw that line between having the religion without making it about the religion? And then also how much time did you want to put into all the different forms of will? Because it feels almost to me like it's like different types of magic, but even though the wills are still... They're the same, but they're different aspects of it. I wasn't quite sure where you were going with that.
Yeah, I wanted to. I mean, soft and hard magic to me wasn't even really the only reason it was a thought is because of how like punctual it is, I guess, inside of fantasy and sci-fi. I wanted to have more of a. I wanted to lean softer. I know that there's allusion to hard rules because I think there is like a set of constructed rules in my head, but I can't say too much going forward in the story as to what that may mean for the characters. As far as the religion goes, I think if I had a character who were heavily religious or religion and faith were such a big part of who they were, which as we get into book two we kind of do get a little bit more of that, but it's not such a big part in the person's development. If I had one of those characters where it's like their whole thing, sort of like, I don't know if you read The Way of Adan and the Dan trilogy. But like, you know, you have a lot of characters like priests.
I started it. I haven't finished it.
Yeah. Yeah. You have like character perspectives where they're literally priests inside of a, you know, a sect of religion. I think if I had characters where that was their thing, I would probably play with that a little bit more. I have rules. I have, you know, Pantheon or a few. That said, there's the how do I say this without like spoiling anything, because it's not even in book one. There are rules to the world that exist, and then there are also rules that characters create. I don't know if I can say that any more than that, but you know, you understand, you have like a religion, and then you have sort of how maybe religion over time gets interpreted, right? So I sort of play with that a little bit. There's what actually is, and then there's what's perceived. So you know, you might get two varying perspectives about X religion or X magic that believe it is a certain way, and it may actually be, or it's also possible that some parts of it are that way, but some other parts are not. So what's more important is I did pull a lot of inspiration from my magic system from like RuneScape, something as simple as like you have these stones and you have people who are born with a mark, and they have access to use the stones in order to use different forms of magic. And then you have schools where they go to where they learn how to access these forms of magic. You can usually only access one unless you're skilled, and then you can access more than one. And it's like, if you know those things, or if you're getting that, you know, people that are marked can use magic, and sometimes people are marked and they can't use magic because they've been exiled and marked to not be able to use the magic. Those are the important aspects of it, and what that means going forward for each character and the world as a whole. That is something that's rather dynamic, is all I can really say.
Yeah. And no, I think a lot of, if you're steeped in fantasy, if you've read a lot of fantasy, you're going to recognize a lot of those different types of things in the storyline. I don't know if I would throw a newbie into Mercy.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you talked about the Way of Adan. I actually had to put a bookmark in the Way of Adan so I could start this little book called Mercy Tears of the Fall.
Grateful. Wow.
So actually, I'm in the middle of that one right now as well.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for doing that. I love the Way of Adan. I think it's great.
Yeah, I'll have to say that is not the book I was expecting from Tweed and Patches. There, I was.
The violence is like, yeah, it's not. I definitely didn't expect what we got, which is, I mean, it's good. It's like very, it's honest. It feels like honest. You know, whatever it is, it's all honest. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, some of your I think the scenes in your prologues really set us up for what we were expecting in this. I also love the fact that you have. You hint at some things, and I think you very intentionally hinted them so that we see them coming. And you've also had a few things sneaking up on me as like, you know, I probably should have known that was going to happen, but he snuck it by me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without going into details, I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah, I do that.
there was a couple in there is like, ooh, yeah, didn't see that coming. Should have seen that coming. Didn't see that coming. Didn't know who that was. That person was.
Oh, yeah.
Got a few of those in there too. It's like, people. I get what's going on here.
Yeah. Once the second book is out and read and I'm in a spoiler discussion, there's going to be a line in the first book that I go back to, that I'm going to say it word for word and everybody's going to be like, oh, gotcha. Yeah, there's a sentence that I put inside of, book one that foreshadows something later, and you know it's something I play with, but I don't want to say more than that. But it's there's one sentence I won't say in which perspective, I won't say which character says it, that I will go back to at the end of book two with people who've read it.
I get that. Yeah, no, trust me, I've had a few too where I got to the end of something and then I was like, that's what that meant.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I do have to say, I don't know if you're going to have an audiobook done of this, but I feel sorry for whoever reads your audiobook. Some of the names you create in here, and I don't mean like the names of the people, like that thing in the cave. How do you pronounce that?
I think I could say it. without spoiling anything.
We know they're a thing in a cave.
Yeah, yeah. That's another thing I foreshadow earlier in the book, which is like a passing phrase. I'm trying to debate if I can say that. Yeah, no, I think I can. A trough.
Yeah, see, I don't know if I got that. I don't know if that's how I would have pronounced it reading into my head.
Yeah, it's funny because I do get other people. I do get various, images of what people think it would look like. I know they're, I don't want to say too much. I could tell you offline exactly kind of what.
No, that's fine. But, I mean, they're talked about way before we ever actually run into one. So
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't think that was too particularly spoilery. We see them. We know that we're going to run into those at some point, because otherwise, why would you bring them up?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh, yeah, that's a good point, though. Like I said, the book hasn't come out yet, so I am trying to avoid some spoilers. Well, let me do this. What do you want to tell people about the book without spoiling anything?
Yeah, I think. And I've heard Red over at Red's Reading Cafe said this. I think I've heard other people say it as well. It does require a little bit of trust. I think I try to make sure that I'm putting forward trust and giving just enough payoff to kind of keep people on board throughout the story. And the storytelling is the important part for me. Obviously, I think I'm going to improve as a writer as I get on in my writing career. I think that trust is big. Just like I hope readers know that I trust them, and it's sort of unconditionally, and in a way that as they go through the book, I do want them to trust me, and I want them to be confident in the fact that I'm going to deliver on the promises that I make, and there will be progress, and there will be payoff. And it's a matter of, what does that payoff look like, and how does that resonate with whoever's reading? Book one is a lot of promising. The payoff you get in book one is a lot of, and I've heard Sanderson talk about this. It's about saying, I'm still promising you something. I'm going to leave this over here. You can still look at this. This is still a thing that's progressing. Also, here's this. Mm-hmm. And you're actually about to hit that point. I think trust is a big thing when it comes to reading any author, especially new authors. I know it's hard, especially considering you have a lot of authors who aren't finishing their series, who are like massive, to the point where I get why it would be hard to trust somebody, especially just new coming into it. But trust is a big thing. I think trust the story that you're reading. If there ever comes a point where, just know also that I want to deliver the story the way that I would like to enjoy it. And I like to think I have decent taste. That's the best way I can explain it.
Well, I can say as somebody who, again, is about 90% through with this book, again, the epilogue, you're just kind of thrown in it. There's a lot of stuff going on. And then you get through the first couple of chapters and you start to learn who people are and you get a little bit farther. And there are parts, too, there where you're like, wait, what happened to this? And trust me, he'll get back to it. Chance will get back to it.
Yeah.
But about the 50, 60% mark, I feel like it just picks up speed. You know who everybody is now. That's the hardest part with a beginning book of anybody, is that you've created a world and you have to tell the person what's going on in the world. But there's that fine line between holding their hand and having to explain everything to them, which, that's may work for a certain reader, but I think your average fantasy reader who's been reading a while, they don't want their hand held all the way through. It's like, just tell me the story.
Yeah.
But you also don't want to just info dump on them either. So you're going to start the book not knowing stuff. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Until you get to that point, you learn it as you go. I would say that the more I read this book, I only got through about 50% of this book up until this morning. And then I read 40% of it this morning.
Wow. Torched it.
Because, again, we're getting, like I said, the story to me just keeps picking up speed.
That's fair.
And the more that I've learned as I read the book, the less I have to stop and think about. Because again, those first few things, you're like, wait, who's this now? Who are we talking about? Okay, that's so-and-so. And and you have to go back and say, okay, he's talking about this will or that land, or who has, you know, violet on violet eyes and who has green on green eyes.
Yeah.
So like I said, I think it's got that slow beginning, even though it's not written slow, just because there's a lot to digest. But the more I read this book, the faster this book is going for me. If I had another hour, I probably would be done with it.
That's a really cool.
Another half hour, I'd probably be done with it.
That's a really cool experience to hear, honestly.
By the time it's going, it's like, I almost, when you hopped on, I'm like, oh, crap.
That's so cool.
He's here. I got to pause it. But yeah, it's like I said, it's really getting to the point, and I'm avoiding spoilers like the plague. It's really getting to the point where stuff is starting to come together. And I'm at that point where I'm also at the point of like, okay, now I got to know what happens next.
Yeah.
You know, I'm done learning about the characters. Now I'm learning the plot. I'm learning you've got political intrigue in here. Like I said, you've got that hint of religion in here, if that's your thing. You've got, for lack of a better word, some sword and sorcery, because I mean, what is the wills, if not your form of magic?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's got everything a fantasy reader would want.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely, yeah. I mean, I am also a reader of fantasy. I'm an enjoyer of like fantasy, media, and it's obviously my favorite genre. And yeah, I wanted to create a story that, you know, I definitely wanted to create something relatively original. I know how hard that is, considering how many things have been done. And there's so many things in my book that you can look at, you know, once you know what they are. Like, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's, you know, we can see where he pulled that idea from, or that concept, you know, where it morphed from. But I wanted to do my best to sort of create, to be honest, like reading Malazan and going through Steven Erikson's works and seeing just how big his fantasy is, and how like massive and high and epic that fantasy is, gave me sort of like runway to play with. I was like, oh, okay, you can do this. You don't have to just do, it doesn't just have to be elves who play in the woods. I was going to say, it doesn't have to be dwarves who play in the mountains, but you know, we do have a race of Kull who I guess their lineage would be considered of dwarf like, who are in, and actually I feel like I sort of feel bad for this because that race is mostly wiped out at the beginning of the story. But yeah, I do play with some of those things. I in my head, I didn't want to limit myself to what the rules traditionally are for those things. And I wanted to create different rules for what they may be perceived as, to sort of spark an imaginative fury inside whoever's head is reading. You know, I wanted that to be alive. And, you know, like playing Elden Ring for the first time, I keep going back to this, but I walked into that world. Like I know that that's, you know, a horse and a guy on a horse. He looks sort of like a noble knight, but then you find out like maybe not so much, you know, or maybe he's a zealot for whatever this, you know, sect of faith is. And now you're fighting him and you don't really know why. I like that. I like that like weird feeling of just being lost. Yeah, I don't know. It's fun. And then once you figure out where you are, you can never go back and feel that that mystery again. It's gone. But then you start to uncover all of the things and all the layers that lie beneath that, which is also very cool. You know, like you have to have both things. But yeah, I think that fantasy readers will find a lot to like here. There's a lot of, funny enough, sci-fi from Dune, but Dune is very much a fantasy thing. But like obviously the green on green eyes and the violet on violet eyes, you know, that's reading Dune. They talk about blue on blue eyes. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool thing. And you know, like why also does that happen? And then if you go back to in my head, this is not something you know in the book, but why are each person's color, why is their eye color this way? And then it does go back to some races we don't actually see a ton of in the first book. The Olden Eye is what I'm thinking of initially. They're usually you see them as weavers, which are a sect of women who are in a you know, a sort of religious organization where their whole thing is navigating innovation for the entire realm, and you know, figuring out what's next, like what technological advancements can we make. So you have that. And why are their eyes violet on violet? Well, if you go back, you know, how many tens of thousands of years through the different epochs, you'd find out, you know, that their race was initially responsible for killing demons. And then there's a drug that they had to take in order to see a certain, in a certain, you know, setting of light. And so that's why they have that eye color. And so, you know, each race has that sort of thing. And what it goes back to in their lineage is, you know, it's a cool little detail that I have that I can play with. That I like, that would, for me to throw that in the book would be silly. Like, there's nothing that would warrant somebody to know that piece of information, at least in the first book.
No, no, and I get this. Sorry, I was getting a little echo from my speaker, so
no, you're okay.
Yeah. Myself for a minute. Yeah, I dig, again, I at 90% in, I don't think you'd mentioned that at all in the book.
Not so at all.
That was news to me.
Yeah,
I had been wondering for a while now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and of course, I think this happens. This is separate. I think this happens with every author. You've got your main characters, but of course, your readers always fall in love with some of your side characters.
Yeah.
I've got two favorites so far. One you're probably going to guess. The other one, I don't know if it's going to be a surprise to you or not. Obviously, Dolan. Love Dolan.
Okay. Okay. Dulo, you mean? Is that
the, isn't that his name, Dolan? The one that the guy in the traveling cart?
Yeah, Dulo.
Okay.
You said it earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think Hade.
Hade. So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I love Hade.
Yeah. Yeah. Hade's a fan favorite. And it's funny because I did approach it from a place of like, everybody sort of has a story. Everybody is a main character in their own, you know, life. And so at least I tried. And obviously the plot and the narrative sort of like keys towards a couple of characters, but usually there's something, you know, in it, there's some skin in the game for every character. And I love the unraveling of someone who seems like minor, and the role they play in the world happens to be major. It's sometimes even bigger than those of the main characters that we see in the story. Yeah.
All right. Anything else? Like I said, the biggest, this is always the roughest part of having an author interview before the book comes out, is there's so much we can't talk about.
Yeah.
You said you've already, book two is in the editing process. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm currently in the middle of revisions for book two. Yeah.
I also feel like this is always the hardest part for the author too, because you always want to have these conversations right before your book comes out. But at this point, you're usually completely, you know, knee deep in another book. It's like, oh yeah, I got to remember what I wrote 3 years ago by the time the book comes out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, fortunately, book one's still living pretty lively in my head. I think we're at a place where it's like close enough for me separating myself from the most recent proofread as we go into the release in July, that it's sort of still living pretty fresh. And then also what does help, honestly, is a lot of people messaging me and, you know, talking about the book, the things that they enjoy. I have people rereading right now, which to me is crazy. I didn't know that would happen that soon. And it's really cool because I'm getting messages about, oh, you put this in front of me this whole time. I was like, that's crazy. It's cool. It's really, really cool. And considering how many times I had to read it, it does feel a little bit better knowing I'm not the only person that's reread it. So,
well, yeah, no,
yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah.
I also love the fact that most of your characters, that doesn't sound right. That sounds bad. As far as I know, all of your characters, you know, none of these are like two-dimensional fill-in characters, which I always love. I mean, you've always got these ones like, okay, maybe there's like a guard at the door. Of course, he's a two-dimensional character. We're never going to hear from the guard again. But all of your other characters, I feel like they're not just put in to fill a slot. You have an entire backstory, kind of like what you're talking about, for every one of these characters. I forgot his name.
You're
I can't describe him because that would be a spoiler. But one of the guys that works for Theothis, for instance, he could just be a background guy and just like a you know, nameless thug or something like that, but he's not. He's very much, he's got his own story. And some of these characters that maybe start out in the background, you get a couple chapters in and all of a sudden now they're a main plot point. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I always love having that character that you're not expecting anything from all of a sudden become a main character in his own right.
Yeah. It does sort of stink because sometimes. Oh, F-14 Tomcats. We had a RCO, I think, actually was one of. I'm probably not going to remember this right because he was flying we were flying F-18s at the time, but he was a part of a Tomcat squadron, I think, before he became one of our XO and then CO for our squadron. But yeah, wow, that's pretty wild. I didn't know that. But yeah, I referring to the characters and how they play and their roles inside of the story. Getting into book two, I'm navigating this right now, so it's actually funny you bring it up because it's hard because every story, every character is the main character in their story, but sometimes I'm navigating making characters and like refining their arcs to make sure that they're cleaner and things of that nature. And just as important, it's so hard to navigate because some players are bigger in a certain part of the story and they're just not in others. And it's just kind of like a natural sort of regression that may happen, but it's always important to remember that, you know, again, that comes back to trust and like believing that I'm going to be able to follow through on sort of these characters' arcs and they're not just going to be placeholders. You're going to find out at the end of this book, a bit more about some characters who or a character that may have seemed as a placeholder. And yeah, I think that's I'm excited for you to finish and I can't wait because you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about as you finish up.
I'm just always impressed with an author, especially any author who can have that many characters, because to make each character have their own voice, you've got to give them all their own personalities and you got to give them all their own motivations. And then even though maybe he's not your main character, if you don't have that character stay true to that voice, personality, and motivation, the readers are going to call you out on it.
Yep.
They just are. It's like, oh, he would never do that. Mm-hmm. Kind of like everybody complained about the last season of Game of Thrones.
It's
based on the book, but that's besides the point. Yeah. But you know, people doing stuff out of character, the readers, once you introduce a character to a reader, he's not just your character anymore. He becomes ours, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And it's like, we may even not like a character, but we don't want him to see him just do something out of character because you got to a plot point and you needed him to do something.
Yeah.
If he does do something out of character, there's got to be an explanation for it. And yeah. I think that's the hardest part. As a person who doesn't write, but having talked to others, I think it's the hardest part.
Yeah.
Is okay. I've been writing 500 pages now, and now I've got to bring back this guy from the first part. And okay, what was his motivation? What was his personality? What was his voice? Because if you get that wrong, the only thing worse than getting that wrong than getting something when you write something in the real world and you get a historical aspect wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you write that somebody's riding on a motorcycle in 1924 that didn't come out till 1926, somebody's going to call you out on that.
Yeah. But then if you say that in 1924 somebody made a time machine to travel to 1926 to get the motorcycle, you might be okay. You might be able to get away with it. But of course, then
you got
to
go full sci-fi.
Yeah, exactly. We're taken out of history at that point. But yeah. Yeah, I think that's all to say that, you know, there's only one arc in particular from a minor character that referencing something you're talking about that my early readers caught in just like the authenticity of the character. And like, you know, they seem too XYZ to fall for XYZ. And I'm like, yeah, actually, that's a good point. I need to go back and, you know, it took several passes to get that character's point to make sense, that perspective to make sense. So yeah, it's all very, you know, it's about playing too, you know, like sometimes you try things and it doesn't get by. Hey, but Britain, what's going on, dude? Sometimes you try things and they work for, you know, some people and they don't work for others. And, you know, it's my job to go in and navigate like, yeah, either. Yeah. That like, that's a good point. Or like, nah, you know, like that's not the case. And it is a balancing act. I think a lot of the times I have a pretty good thumb on the pulse of what to, you know, what may work and what not work. Not necessarily I'm saying as I'm going, but through feedback and being able to be like, yeah, you know, like this kind of, we need this here versus, okay, I need to justify it. Instead of trying to justify it, sometimes it's okay to go back and just get rid of it. But I think it's worth taking it to its extreme end. It's worth trying to justify to see. And if you take it there and it's like, doesn't work, then you know it doesn't work. But it does take some time and it does take some work. But yeah, yeah, it's an interesting experience. But that's a really good point that you brought up about authors struggling with that.
Sounds good. I think you said something about you already starting on book three. Do you see this as a trilogy? Is that where it's going to end? Or
so the way that Lord of the Rings is one massive book cut into three, right? I wanted to do a similar thing, but make it two books. So I have books one and two, which are a single arc of the story. And then books three and four are going to cover the final act, essentially. So it's the goal is to have two omnibus editions in the future that are it's like a duology, the way that you know, the Book of the New Sun with Shadow and Claw and Sword and Citadel, like that sort of playing with that as well. That was kind of what I was going for.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Yep.
And then, do you see yourself branching out, or are you going to keep playing around in this world? That may be getting way too far ahead of ourselves. I'm just asking.
No, you're good. There's a more modern, like I love thrillers generally. So I have like a modern thriller. I wrote a couple or two or three chapters for that I'm playing with every once in a while. That one I think is going to be down the line. That might be one of my projects outside of this fantasy world. But this world and all of its history and all the things that I can play with, there's just too much for me to not. Ideally, I do want to create like a tabletop RPG where I can kind of go back to a period of time and let players navigate you know, parts of the world that maybe they haven't seen. And creating stories, and I have a whole system that I have made up that I really want people to be able to play and engage in that I created when I was drafting. I had like two tables of 8 to 16 people playing. Me and a co-DM were running a game where these two groups were on separate continents, and the goal was to kind of get them to the same place, which, you know, did sprout a lot of how I constructed the narrative in Tears of the Fallen. But yeah, I think that there's a few stories that I know standalone that I want to tell in this world, or at least in this universe, sort of like a Cosmere, like multiverse, maybe. I don't know. It's not so much multiverse. It's just be different times, like the, you know, going back in time, going forward in time, that sort of deal.
Gotcha. I think Triple B was hoping for a spicy romance, so we'll have to tell him he's not getting it.
Well, I do actually have a love story that I want to tell about the planting of the great trees. I think when it comes, as far as spice is concerned, I think that I'm going to write relatively more PG-13, or like even you can kind of like teeter on R-rated, but I'm not going to get to the point where, you know, the spice exceeds a certain point. I think I might, if I ever do, I would put the spice behind like a paywall on like my Patreon. So if there are people who wanted that chapter, they got to throw down for it.
Actually, it'll be Chan's fan fiction of his own book. Got it.
All yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. here's the 8 pages you guys wanted so bad for X amount of dollars.
All right. So, exactly. I think I feel like maybe we've exhausted the non-spoiler part of the stuff. Anything else I have a question about, I'm so worried that's going to give something away. Because, of course, I have the question because I got to a certain point in the book. Mm-hmm. So let me do this. I'm going to go, again, I joked about this originally supposed to be a BookTuber interview, but I'm going to treat this much more like an author interview. So I always finish up with a few questions for my authors. One, what, if anything, are you reading right now?
I'm finishing up Will of the Many. I'm reading The Crimson Fire by Abel Montero, who's another BookTuber, who also did all my typography. He did my dust jacket design, my all that stuff. Not in terms of the cover. The cover was actually done by Stuart Botch, but yeah, Abel really helped me with putting the formatting together, everything. He is an excellent resource. He's a great all-around person. But yeah, so I'm reading The Crimson Fire and Will of the Many. As soon as I'm done with The Will of the Many, I think I have like 10% left in that book. I'm going to jump right into Reaper's Gale by Steven Erickson. I need to get back to Malaz, and I've been away from it for far too long. And then I'm going to do By Blood, By Salt in July by J.L. Odom.
Gotcha. Yeah, I got the ebook, so I couldn't show what I see behind you. I did want to let you know, I thought that was a gorgeous cover, by the way, for Mercy.
Oh, yeah. Stuart did. So this figure on the side actually was done from another concept that Stuart did for me. But yeah, I mean, Abel just sort of peeled things apart for me and made it work. But yeah, I was blown away by what Stewart did here. I didn't know what to expect, but I don't know. Once I saw that, I was blown away. And I just actually submitted for the second cover, so that should be coming around in August, that announcement for what the title is already out. Ill is the Fate is the name of the second book. And then the cover will be releasing in August for that one.
When do you think the book's going to be released?
I have a tentative date set for March. My goal was 8 months after release of book one. Going into the second feedback round, I'll have a third feedback round. I should be finishing between August and September. Dave gets the manuscript. He works through it so fast in September, I think, or that'll be the goal. And then it is just about me turning it around to him, going through it a couple times, then getting it to my copy editor. She goes through it. Gracie York goes through it. I think she takes usually about 3 to 4 weeks, and then I turn it around about as fast as I can, and then I get to proofreaders, and then by that point I'm going to be doing ARCs. So we're going to try and get that process squared away. But yeah.
Gotcha. If the book does sell 1,000 copies, are you going to get yourself a mic stand, or has the lightsaber become too much of, you know, your thing?
Yeah, it's the staple. I think I might get a mic stand for the D&D games, because it is hard to hold this puppy up when I'm playing D&D. But otherwise, this mic is what I started with. It's what I'm going to end with. And funny enough, my buddy in the military is the one that got it for me. My roommate, my buddy Howie. Yeah. So funny.
And then I know you're an indie author. I always tell everybody I'm not a Amazon hater, but I do love my brick and mortar. So I always ask every author to give a shout out to a brick and mortar that they enjoy going to.
Oh my gosh. There's one in Morro Bay, California. I cannot think of the name of it for the life of me that I just love going to. There's a few in the city that I actually can't think of the names right now. So it's one of those, you just kind of go. there's one on the Upper East Side. I think it's on 91st or 92nd Street on the East Side. But yeah, I am terrible at remembering names of stores. But Morro Bay, California is loaded. There's like two or three out there that I really like. And then out here in the city, I mean, you know, you get brick and mortar, 50 Shades of Dylan. You get brick and mortar, and then you get, you know, even the library has like a basement where they sell books at discounted prices, used books. It's I found actually a couple of Malazan copies there that I really, really like. But yeah.
This is partly my fault, because I usually send my sample questions to each author, and I did not send them to Chance. That's on me.
You're good. You're good. I
try to give everybody a little bit of a heads up what I'm going to ask, except for the book type questions, because again, sometimes I'm pulling in sideways with the books.
No, you're good. Yeah.
All right. What is next on your agenda? What do you shout out? Are you going to be showing up on somebody else's channel? Feel free to give them a shout out. What are you doing next?
Yeah, I'm going on Josh at Already Overbooked. I'm going to his channel on Wednesday. I mean, I just did Dear Dr. Fantasy, which was crazy. And then I had Red's Reading Cafe. I had a conversation with Red. It was great. Hobby Vomit is another channel that's like slowly entering the book sphere space. And they're just like such a Ian and Matt are such like great dudes to chat with. But I had that conversation a few weeks ago. But yeah, those are the Already Overbooked is the closest one coming up. That's going to be on Wednesday. I don't know if that's a live or pre-recorded, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that, because he's one of the earlier reviewers of Mercy as well.
Yep. Yep. He talked about it. I'll have to tease him about how you're going on his channel second, but I like talking to Josh. In fact, I've got, I think Josh is my next booktuber that I'm
having. Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah. He's got a great channel too.
No, actually like Jake from Nerdle.
Jake. Yeah. Yeah.
My next one.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I mean, great channels all around. I love Josh's channel is great because I love his format. Just talking about his, you know, what's going on in his life a little bit early on and so forth. And then getting into the books. It's great. EJ. Yeah. I'm so grateful that so many people have enjoyed it so far. And it's crazy. I didn't know exactly what to expect, but I'm super grateful that people have kind of been along the journey and enjoying the book.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. I want to, because normally I can chat longer, but I do have some stuff going on today. And my wife keeps telling me, is like, do you ever think about maybe not keeping these people on your channel for 2 hours? Maybe go to bed or something. But
so funny.
No, I appreciate you coming on. Like I said, I love loving this book. The farther I've gotten into this, the more I've gotten. In fact, I hate the fact that I actually have something to do, or else I would finish this book just as soon as we get off, because you know where I'm at. And I've got to see what's happening, because we also just... found out something that you may or may not where I am in the book on what I just found out. And I'm like, okay, I gotta see where this is going. So you do have, like I said, if you haven't checked out Chance's book yet, and well, obviously it's not out yet. When is the, I should have checked that out. What's
no, you're good. July 20th is when it comes out. You can pre-order it on Amazon.
You need to be picking this book up. It is one of those books that once you get into it, it's just going to get faster and faster. And next thing you know, I feel like I'm going to get done with this. I'm going to be like, I need March to get here. I need to know what's next, because that's kind of where I'm at now, is I need to know what's next. Appreciate everybody who's hung out in the chat. And like I said, if you want more information on this, since I had to cut this one a little short today, swing over and check them out on Josh's channel, already overbooked. That's going to be coming up next. And man, I appreciate you. I've been kind of watching you ever since. I think we met, for lack of a better word, on Talking Story.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of got, I think everybody in the chat has probably been on Talking Story at some point. But yeah, love to see where you're going with this, and I'm happy to be along the ride with you. And again, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on here with me.
Yeah, I'm so grateful that you had me on. I love talking about this stuff, you asked a bunch of great questions. I'm really happy we had this conversation.
All right, appreciate you guys, and I am going to catch you later.
Later, everybody.